Romance of the Three Kingdoms, Chapter 111.
Yeah, this is a great moment in the sources. We're right after the Battle of Didao. Jian Wei's pulled back to Zongti, successfully, mind you, and Wei's forces, under Chen Tai and Deng Ai, have just relieved the city. But here's the thing, the sources don't really dwell on the victory. Instead, we immediately get into the war councils. Both sides are debating, believe it or not, whether Xu should just launch another major attack right away. And you see the stakes immediately over on the Wei side. Chen Tai reports Deng Ai's critical role straight to the emperor, Cao Mao. Deng Ai gets rewarded, he's made Angxi general, given command over Yang and Liang provinces, huge responsibility. And crucially, he forms this instant connection with Chen Tai. The source calls it a forget-the-years friendship, so they're united, they're powerful, and they're laser-focused on Jiang Wei.
Okay, that really sets the stage. Wei's defense is solidified under these two very capable commanders. But Deng Ai, he doesn't just wait around, does he? He anticipates. Even with Jiang Wei retreated, Deng Ai writes down his five reasons why Xu has to come back. He's basically predicting his opponent's logical next move.
It's really quite something, a deep psychological read.
Yeah.
Deng Ai's first point just flips the script on the whole retreating army needs rest idea.
Mm.
He argues Xu still has this momentum of victory from before, while Wei's forces, they're actually weakened, maybe a bit disorganized from rushing to the rescue at Didao.
Right, so he's looking beyond the retreat itself at the residual energy and the state of mind. What about troop quality? That always seems to be a factor.
Oh, absolutely. That's a second reason. Deng Ai points out a structural advantage for Xu. Their troops are veterans, trained under Zhu Giliang's demanding system. They're disciplined. Wei, on the other hand, kept changing generals. So, you know, there's less continuity, maybe less consistent training. He saw Xu's core troops as just fundamentally better prepared.
Makes sense. And logistics, always the killer. How did Deng Ai calculate the supply situation?
That's point three. And it's just pure battlefield realism. Xu could use boats, rivers. That saves immense physical labor, keeps soldiers fresher. Wei, they're hauling everything over land. Slow, exhausting work. Deng Ai saw that logistical strain as a major weakness for Wei in this theater.
And number four, that classic principle, concentration of force.
Exactly. Wei's on defense, right? So they have to spread out. They're guarding Didao, Longji, Nanan, and Qishan. Four key spots. That means no single garrison is overwhelmingly strong. Deng Ai predicts Jiang Wei knows this and can just pick one target and hit it hard with a concentrated force.
Okay, and the final point, food. How does an invading army eat? How did Deng Ai think Jiang Wei would solve that?
He figured Jiang Wei had options. Reason five, option one, forage grain from the Chang people, moving through Nanan or Longji, easy pickings. Option two, if Jiang Wei goes for Qishan instead, there's a ripe wheat harvest ready for the taking. So Deng Ai concludes, look, lack of food isn't going to stop him. He presents this whole analysis, and Chen Tai apparently agrees completely, calls Deng Ai's foresight godlike. High praise.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting. Over in the Xu camp, Jiang Wei is getting advice, sensible advice, maybe from his officer Fan Jian. Fan Jian says, let's rest the troops, consolidate. But Jiang Wei, well, he seems almost incapable of resting. He comes back with his own five reasons why they must attack now. He's basically using Deng Ai's own logic, but to argue for offense.
It's fascinating, isn't it? They both see the same battlefield realities, the same facts on the ground, but draw completely opposite conclusions about what to do next. Jiang Wei's first point, he directly challenges Deng Ai's assessment. He says Wei morale isn't just weakened, it's crushed by the Didao situation.
Mm-hmm.
And Xu, they retreated in good order, no significant losses. So psychologically, Jiang Wei feels they have the upper hand.
And he brings up the logistics too, Xu using boats, being less tired, and the troop quality difference, calling the Wei soldiers a rabble without clear standards. Pretty harsh.
Well, it shows his confidence, right? He believed in his troops' training, that Zhu Liang legacy. And his fourth and fifth reasons mirror Deng Ai's concerns perfectly. Yep, we can grab the autumn grain by going via Qishan. And yep, Wei has to split its forces while we can concentrate ours.
So they agree on the facts, morale, supply, troop concentration, but it comes down to risk appetite. Jiang Wei's aggression versus Deng Ai's calculated defense, and Jiang Wei chooses aggression. He decides to attack Longji immediately. He even overrides warnings from people like Xu Huba, who apparently told him, look, Deng Ai's plans run deep.
And that decision kicks off the real mind game. Jiang Wei marches towards Qishan. Maybe he's thinking about that wheat initially, but he gets there and stops dead. Wei is already there. They set up 9 interconnected camps. The source describes it as a long snake formation, head and tail linked.
Mm.
Very defensive, hard to penetrate. and the setup, it seriously impresses Jiang Wei.
He paid Deng Ai quite the compliment, didn't he? The highest one a Shu general could probably give.
He absolutely did. Jiang Wei reportedly tells his officers that Deng Ai's strategy here is not beneath Zhu Gliang himself. High praise indeed. Realizing he can't just punch through a Qishan, Jiang Wei has to pivot. And he comes up with this this really elaborate deception.
Let's break down how this worked, because it's almost theatrical. He orders General Bao Su to set up a very visible camp right at the entrance to the Qishan Valley.
Yeah, and this camp is basically a stage prop. Bao Su is told to constantly send out small scouting parties, only about 100 riders each time. Just enough to be seen. But here's the clever bit. Every time they ride out, they have to change their armor and their flags. Cycle through the 5 main colors, green, yellow, red, white, black.
So the idea is to create this illusion of like an endless stream of fresh troops arriving, making Wei think the entire Shu army is massing there for a big push on Qishan.
Precisely. Keep the enemy watching the pretty colors, counting horses that seem to go on forever. Meanwhile, Jiang Wei takes his main force and slips away quietly via Dongting, his real target, Nenan. A classic feint, beautifully planned.
But Deng Ai, the master observer, he wasn't buying the light show. How on earth did he see through something so carefully staged?
Deng Ai wasn't looking at the flags. He was looking at the horses. Simple as that. He watched the scouts come out 5 times a day, saw the colors change. But he noticed something else. They were the same few horses. And crucially, they looked exhausted, worn out from all the riding back and forth. That detail, the tired animals, told him 2 things. 1, whoever was running this show didn't have many troops in reserve. 2, the main Shu army wasn't there. He immediately figured Jiang Mama must have taken the Dongting route to hit Nan'an.
Wow, that's almost chilling insight, using tired horses to debunk a psychological trick. So what's Deng Ai's counter? He needs to react fast to save Nan'an.
Oh, his reaction is swift and brilliant. 2 parts. First, he sends Chen Tai straight to attack Bao Su's now exposed, mostly empty camp at Qishan. Cut off Jiang Wei's northern retreat path, eliminate the distraction, done. 2nd, and this is the key move, Deng Ai himself makes a mad dash for the most critical piece of terrain near Nan'an, Wucheng Mountain.
Right, securing Wucheng Mountain essentially controls Nan'an, doesn't it? It's the high ground, hard to bypass.
It's everything in that area.
Yeah.
So when Jiang Wei arrives near Nan'an, expecting maybe light resistance, he's stunned. Wucheng Mountain is already occupied, Wei flags flying, Deng Ai's banner, and Deng Ai refuses to come down and fight. Instead, from the high ground, the Wei forces start this relentless campaign of harassment.
Yeah, the sources talk about fire attacks, artillery,
yeah,
hitting the supply lines, right?
Exactly. Constant signals, rocks and arrows raining down from above, preventing Jiang Wei from setting up a proper camp. And critically, using fire to burn Shu supply wagons. So Jiang Wei is stuck. He's on difficult terrain. He can't assault the mountain effectively. He can't secure his supplies. And his opponent won't give him a straight fight.
Okay, so Jiang Wei, even though he's caught off guard, he's still thinking. Wucheng is a stalemate. He realizes the next logical target has to be the supply depot for Nan'an, which is Xingyi. So he pivots again. Leaves Shehuba to try and hold the line against Deng Ai at Wucheng and takes his main force towards Xingyi, still trying to salvage the campaign.
And this is the absolute peak of Deng Ai's foresight, the multi-layered prediction. Deng Ai had already figured Jiang Wei would do this. He reasoned, if I successfully hold Wucheng Mountain, Jiang Wei, being logistics-minded, will have to go for Xingyi next. He predicted Jiang Wei's reaction to his own success.
He anticipated the countermove to his countermove, so he had already prepared for that.
He had. Before even reaching Wucheng himself, or maybe just as he secured it, Deng Ai had already dispatched his son, Deng Zong, and another officer, Shi Quan, with 5,000 troops. Their mission, set up an ambush at the unavoidable choke point on the road to Xingyi. A place called the One Valley.
The One Valley, Broken Valley, Cut Off Valley. The name itself feels like a bad omen.
You can imagine Jiang Wei arriving there. Narrow pass, steep sides, he sees the terrain, notes the name Duanggu. The sources say he literally thought, if someone blocks the exit, what happens to us? But it was too late. Just as that thought hits him, the ambush springs. Deng Zhang and Shi Quan attack the front of his column. Chaos.
And then Deng Ai himself shows up with the main Wei force, hitting Jiang Wei from behind, sealing the trap.
Exactly. They closed the valley entrance. Shu forces were caught in the narrow pass, completely trapped. It was a massacre, a devastating defeat for Shu. The human cost was immense. Jiang Wei managed to escape, thanks to Xiahou Ba fighting a rearguard action, but they soon learned the first part of Deng Ai's plan had worked too. Chen Tai had overrun the Qishan camp and killed General Ba Su, the one running the flag deception.
And tragically, General Zhang Yi, a real Shu veteran, died trying to save Jiang Wei during the chaotic retreat, apparently rushed into the enemy ranks and was cut down by arrows. Just awful losses.
Yeah, the scale of the failure was undeniable. And you see that reflected when Jiang Wei gets back to Hanzhong. He takes responsibility. He formally requests demotion to rear general, though he keeps acting command. It's a direct echo of what Zhu Xiliang did after the Jieting disaster. A public acknowledgement of a major strategic failure.
Okay, so before Sima Zhao could, like, take that final step, declare himself emperor or whatever, he needed to clear the board. The sources mention, briefly, but it's important context, Deng Ai had just won big against Xu, against Jiang Wei.
Right. Which is good news for Wei overall, but strategically, it's great news for Sima Zhao. It lets him claim stability, you know, look, things are under control thanks to my leadership.
And then you see this incredibly fast, almost brazen power grab. The emperor, Cao Mao, he tries to assert himself a little, changes the rainier, a symbolic gesture.
Very symbolic gesture. Mm. But Sima Zhao answers that symbol with, well, overwhelming reality. He immediately has himself named Grand Commandant of all military forces. Jiangxi of Bingmeda Dudu.
Which is basically supreme commander of everything.
Everything military. And the visual the source gives us is stark. He doesn't just walk around town. He travels with, get this, 3,000 armored cavalry as his personal escort.
3,000? That's not security. That's a statement.
It's a mobile power base. It screams, the emperor's secondary. And he backs it up institutionally, too. All state affairs, like all government business, gets handled in his own office, the prime minister's office, the Shangfu.
Completely bypassing the actual imperial court.
Completely. The text says he was openly harboring the intent to usurp Chang Huaiquani Jichen. He wasn't even hiding it anymore. He was, for all practical purposes, running the show.
So the question is, if he has all that power, why hesitate? Why not just, you know, take the throne right then?
Because raw power isn't the same as secure rule. He knew, or at least suspected, there were still powerful figures loyal to the Cao family, the legitimate dynasty. He couldn't risk a massive civil war erupting the second he put the crown on.
He needed to root out the opposition first, identify the loyalists.
Exactly. And neutralize them. Which brings us to his key political operator, Jia Chang. Son of Jia Ku, very much Sima Zhao's confidant and strategist.
His hatchet man, basically.
You could say that. And Jia Chang comes up with this plan. It's cynical, but effective. Let's gauge the real sentiment out there in the key regions before we make the final move.
So they set a trap. Jia Chang gets sent east. The official reason, oh, just consoling the troops, delivering supplies, that kind of thing.
Right, the standard justification.
Right.
But his real mission is to probe opinions, especially in the vital Huainan region, the Tuwei region.
That critical buffer zone between Wei and Wu, and who controls that?
Zugadan, nicknamed Gongxi. Now, this is where it gets interesting. He's the cousin of the legendary Zhuge Liang, the Martial Marquis of Shu.
Wow. So same family, different loyalties.
Fiercely different. Dan had risen high in Wei service after his cousin's fame, controlled this huge military settlement area in Hainan, earned the title High Plain Marquis. His loyalty was to Wei, and it seems it was absolute.
Okay, so Jia Chang heads straight for him. Makes sense. He's powerful, potentially loyal to the old guard, and in a strategic spot.
Precisely. So Jia Chang arranges a banquet for Dan. And during this feast, he just sort of drops the question. Very smoothly, he suggests, well, you know, the current emperor Cao Mao, he's a bit weak and unfit. Maybe Sima Zhao, who's done so much for the state, should take the throne.
But wait, sending Jia Chang, Sima Zhao's right-hand man, that doesn't feel subtle at all. It sounds more like a provocation, like they wanted him to react badly.
That's probably the calculation.
Yeah.
Jia Chang wasn't there for quiet agreement. He was there to force a declaration, one way or the other, right there, probably in front of others, get it out in the open.
And Dan.
He explodes. The text quotes him, "You are the son of Ji Jizu, fed by Wei salary. How dare you utter such treasonous words?" He doesn't just say no. He basically declares he'll die fighting for the court right then and there.
So yeah, not a subtle test. It was designed to elicit exactly that response, wasn't it? To create a reason to remove him.
It seems that way. Jia Chang goes back to Sima Zhao and reports. The gist is, Dan's loyalty is absolute. He's incredibly popular in Huainan. And if we don't deal with him now, he's going to be a massive problem when we make the final move.
Sima Zhao must have been furious, but also maybe pleased. He had his justification.
The source says he was enraged, calling Dan a rat. He realizes he can't wait. He has to act. But crucially, He still needs that thin cover of legitimacy.
So the counter-trap, what does he do?
He issues a public edict, summons Zhu Dan back to the capital, Luoyang. Ostensibly, it's a promotion minister of works, the Sikong. Very prestigious.
Now, functionally, it strips him of his army and brings him right into Sima Zhao's grip.
Exactly. Standard political maneuver. But Sima Zhao also sends a secret letter to the governor nearby, Yulin, in Yang province, telling him to basically keep an eye on Dan, maybe prepare troops.
He's hedging his bets, but Dan isn't stupid.
Not at all. The moment Dan gets that edict, he knows. He just knows it's a setup. And his reaction isn't political maneuvering. It's immediate violent action. He seizes the imperial messenger carrying the edict. Tortures him.
Whoa!
Yeah. Tortures him until the messenger confesses about the secret orders sent to Yulin.
Okay, so now Dan knows he's completely cornered and Yulin is potentially an enemy nearby.
And this is where it just spirals. Dan immediately has the messenger killed, the source says chopped up. Then he musters about 1,000 of his own soldiers and marches straight to Yang province to confront Yulin.
This is open rebellion now. No going back.
Absolutely none. He gets to Yang province, apparently breaks down the city gates, storms in, finds Yulin, who, remember, is the son of the famous Wei general Yu Jin, up on some building floor. Dan accuses him point blank, reminds him how much kindness Yulin's father received from the Wei emperors, essentially calls him a traitor for siding with Sima Zhao. And then, before Yulin can really respond, Dan kills him. Right there.
Just like that. That act, killing Yulin, that's the point of no return. That's war against Sima Zhao declared in blood.
It is. The die is cast. Dan then sends a formal memorial, a document to Luoyang, listing all of Sima Zhao's crimes, basically declaring his reasons for rebellion. But the real power move is his mobilization.
How big are we talking?
Huge. The sources say over 100,000 settlers and military households from his Huainan region. These aren't just soldiers. It's like the whole region rising up. Plus another 40,000 troops from Yan province who likely surrendered or joined him after Yulin's death.
That's a massive force. Over 140,000 people mobilized against Sima Zhao. But even that, facing the Central Wei army...
He knows it's not enough on its own. So he immediately looks for outside help. He turns to Eastern Wu.
Makes sense. The enemy of my enemy.
Right. He sends his chief clerk, Wu Gang, to the Wu court. And as a sign of commitment, a guarantee, he sends his own son, Su Jing, as a hostage.
Sending his son as a hostage, that really underscores it, doesn't it? He's not fighting for personal power here. He's fighting for a principle loyalty to Wei, and he's putting his own family on the line.
It's a powerful gesture. And Wu responds. The regent in Wu at the time is Sun Lin, known for being quite powerful and, frankly, violent himself. He sees a golden opportunity.
To weaken Wei. Keep them busy fighting each other.
Exactly. Whether Dan wins or loses, it's good for Wu. So Sun Lin agrees to help. He commits a large force, the sources say, 70,000 troops led by several generals, including Wen Qin as a guide, since Wen Qin knew the area.
Okay, so now Sima Zhao is facing a genuine crisis, a huge internal rebellion led by a respected figure, plus a massive external army from Wu coming to join them.
It's a serious threat. He prepares to march with the main Wei army, but Jia Chong steps in again with crucial political advice.
Wanda.
Jia Chong points out the huge risk of leaving Emperor Cao Mao behind in Luoyang. What if someone else uses the Emperor's presence to rally support against Sima Zhao while he's away fighting?
Ah, the legitimacy issue again. You can't leave the symbol of power unguarded.
Precisely. Which leads to Sima Zhao's most, well, chillingly brilliant move, the Imperial Shield. He forces the young Emperor Cao Mao and the Empress Dowager to come with him on the military campaign against Zhuge Dan.
Forces the emperor to march against a rebellion being fought in his name.
Yes, the public justification. Oh, the emperor needs to be like his great ancestors, Cao Cao, Cao Pai, Cao Rui, personally leading the armies, inspiring the troops.
But the real reason, that's incredibly cynical.
Deeply cynical. By dragging Cao Mao along, Sima Zhao completely co-opts the symbol of legitimacy. Zhuge Dan is now, technically, fighting against the physical presence of the emperor he claims to be loyal to. It's politically devastating for Dan.
Wow. That changes everything for Dan's soldiers, doesn't it? Yeah. Who are they fighting now?
Exactly. Yeah. Sima Zhao mobilizes this enormous army. The sources say 260,000 troops from the two capitals, puts the emperor under the protection of his most loyal generals, Wang Ji, Chan Qin, folks like that, and marches south. The sheer numbers are overwhelming, but the political move is arguably even more powerful.
You have to wonder what went through the minds of Dan's troops when they looked across the field and saw the emperor's banners right there. With Sima Zhao's army. It makes Dan look like the traitor, doesn't it?
It absolutely muddies the waters. It forces every single soldier fighting for Dan to ask themselves, are we patriots or are we rebelling against our emperor? It's a masterstroke of political warfare.
So the massive Wei army moves south. What happens when they meet the Wu forces coming to help Dan?
The clash is almost immediate.
Yeah.
The Wu relief force is trying to reach Zhuge Dan, who's likely fortifying himself in Shaoxian. Sima Zhao sends out his vanguard.
Wang Ji, right, the Zenan general.
That's him. He's the chief vanguard. He encounters the Wu vanguard, led by Zhu Yi.
And the battle.
It's not much of a battle, according to the romance. It's a rout. Wang Ji engages Zhu Yi and defeats him in under three bouts.
Under three bouts? That's incredibly fast, like almost instantaneous defeat.
It signals total dominance by the Wei elite troops.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't stop there. Wang Ji then takes on another Wu general, Tang Zi. Same result. Defeated in under three bouts.
So the entire Wu vanguard just collapses.
Completely shattered. The Wu relief effort is stopped dead in its tracks. They retreat 50 Lei deserters, significant distance, and send word back to Zhuge Dan in Shaoxian that the relief army has been routed.
So Sim, though, just like that, neutralizes the external threat. Dan is now completely isolated.
Pretty much. Surrounded by Sima Zhao's massive army, with the emperor in tow and his potential allies beaten back decisively.